Okay, we'll get started again. So we ended up again, we derived a relationship between the offered load and the throughput for Aloha, and we observed that there was a maximum for an offered load of a half at values greater than a half, you were unstable. And our assumptions that essentially our input process, our the number of the distribution on the packets being dealt with, were not going to hold for this region of G greater than a half. Okay. So what we're going to do now is look at a number of improvements on Aloha, the first of which is slotted Aloha. For slotted Aloha, we'll take a look at, we'll do the same sort of calculation for throughput. We'll have a stab at calculating the delay a packet experiences relatively directly. And we'll have also a look at our assumption of an infinite population and see how do things change if you assume a finite population instead. Okay. So, slotted, after that we'll look at again these carrier sensing algorithms. Slotted Aloha adds one refinement to the Aloha procedure, and that is that it divides time up into slots of length P. Well, if we say that's exactly equal to the packet transmission time, then either we're talking about these normalized where the propagation is lumped in as well. But we have our time P. Okay. And we require that any transmissions start at the beginning of the time slot. And, of course, what that means is that the transmission is going to run for exactly one time slot. And at the end of that time slot, assuming no collision, it will have been received by the receiver. Okay. Aside from this restriction on the starting times, it works exactly the same as before. So a packet, when it's ready, it delays to the beginning of the time slot. When the time slot starts, it transmits. And it either gets acknowledged if it was successful, or if it's not, if there was a collision, then it goes into some sort of back-off routine. Okay. So we're going to start as before with our basic assumptions that the system has this infinite population of users and that the whole arrival process can be represented as a Poisson process. And try and again get our relationship between what goes in the offered load and the efficiency, what ends up coming out. Okay. So the analysis is pretty much the same, except the period in which collisions can occur has been halved. Okay. Since packets are restricted to transmitting in these slots and finishing up in the slots, either in that slot one packet transmitted and you're happy, or multiple packets transmitted and there was a collision. Okay. So the only way for there to be a collision is if multiple packets are transmitted in the same slot. Okay. And so our vulnerable period is now P. And this gives us a probability of a good transmission of e to the minus g. And our throughput then is given by g e to the minus g. And again, we can have a look at what that means. We can figure out what the maximum throughput is. Again, take the derivative, set it equal to zero, solve for g. And you see that the maximum throughput occurs at g equals 1. Okay, so immediately we've increased our region of stability. And that, again, the maximum throughput is twice what it was before. Okay. So we've also increased our efficiency. Okay. So, again, this is made under all these fairly restrictive assumptions, but it gives us a point of comparison where we can at least say, well, it looks pretty clear that this one protocol is sort of more desirable than the other. Okay. So what we're going to do now is have a look at a few of these assumptions that we're making and see how they impact on the analysis that we do. Okay, so the first assumption we're going to relax is our infinite population assumption. And instead, we're going to drop back to having our M stations. And each station has very simple behavior. It either transmits with probability G or M, G over M, or it doesn't transmit with probability 1 minus G over N. So in any time slot, it either transmits or it doesn't, and you have a probability associated with that. What this gives us is the overall traffic, the sum of these going into the system, produces the offered load that we're looking for, namely G. And also this setup, as the number of stations increases, begins to look more and more like our Poisson setup. Note, again, there's one thing that's a little flaky about this, and that is that you fixed G no matter how many stations you have. Okay? So essentially what you're saying is the more stations you have, the less they'd better be transmitting. Or again, you're going to shove yourself farther along this curve. Be aware that, again, the analysis is based on sort of the overall offered load. Okay, so as before, we're not in any way explicitly factoring in the backoff procedure. So we're assuming that no matter what we do, our offered load is going to look like this. Okay, so in this case, we can examine sort of what happens for each individual station, and then on the assumption that all the stations are essentially doing the same thing, then what happens in the system is an aggregate of what happens for each individual station. Okay, so Si is the probability of station I successfully transmitting a packet in any slot, whereas S would be the probability of any packet being successfully transmitted. Okay, so obviously 1 minus SI is the converse, the probability of an unsuccessful transmission. And we also have our offered load. So GI is the probability that a station transmits a packet, and 1 minus GI is the probability that the station does not transmit the packet. Again, by our previous discussion, GI, the offered load for a single station, is just G over M. So it's proportion of the overall load. Okay. So what's the probability of a station J in this case, successfully transmitting a packet? Well, it has to have a packet to transmit, and it has a packet to transmit with probability GJ. And all of the other stations must not have a packet to transmit. Okay. And so that's the probability of each individual station not having a packet to transmit is 1 minus GI. Okay. So overall now, the success of any station can be added to the success of any other station to give your overall success figure. So our overall probability of success is M times SJ, and also G is M times GJ. So just, again, multiplying by M. If we multiply MSJ here, we get MGJ, which becomes G. And these inner terms, we can replace GI by G over M. And again, we've got S in terms of G then, and the number of stations. Okay, so that wasn't too painful. Does it bias anything to do that? Well, it depends, I suppose, on the number of stations. We can observe that in the limiting case, we're back to where we were before. Okay. So as M gets large, our S approaches G e to the minus G, because 1 minus G over M to the minus 1 approaches G over M. Okay. So this approaches G e to the minus G. And again, we can calculate where the maximum occurs. The maximum point occurs, again, at G equals 1. And so we get our maximum efficiency is 1 minus 1 over M to the M minus 1. And again, we see that gives us, it'll approach 1 over E. Okay. So in the limiting case, our distribution is approaching what we had for our infinite value case, which is good. It means that at least the way we're setting the system up makes some sense. Okay, and we can also observe that for M greater than about 20, the approximation is reasonably close. Okay. So it's not an unreasonable assumption to make that we have an infinite population for any even sort of large M. It gives you quite a close result. Okay. So From now on, we're just going to stick with our infinite population assumption. The next question is, what happens if we explicitly take back off into account, or why would we want to explicitly take back off into account? And the main reason to take back off into account is to calculate, or to have a more specific calculation of the transfer delay, and it also allows us to calculate our efficiency based on this transfer delay. So it gives us another way of calculating efficiency. Okay. So essentially this is back to thinking about cycles and cycle times, and we can then try and deduce efficiency from that. Okay. The problem is that it's a bit complicated to do. So, I'm sorry. So what assumptions are we making? What's our setup? Okay, we're not going to explicitly account for retransmissions, and by that I mean we're not going to sort of put them into the offer. Well, we are in a way, but they're not going to be in the offered load now. But we will lump them into a total arrival process. Okay. So we have two components. We have new arrivals and their Poisson with some rate lambda. And then we have our unsuccessful packets also lead into the transmission time. But again, we say that we can lump this into an offered load. Okay, so in that sense, we're not really explicitly dealing with the retransmissions. Okay, retransmissions plus new transmissions are getting lumped into the same offered load. Okay. We assume that, sort of it's a lightly loaded system in the sense that any station has at most one packet to transmit at any given time. And we assume that the station learns whether or not its transmission was successful in a round trip time, and again, the round trip time is normalized to our transmission time. Okay, and the only reason to do this is so that everything is in terms of our slots P. Okay. And then we ignore processing times. So what happens? Our station, specifically what happens with an unsuccessful transmission? Well, our station transmits. At some time RP later, it realizes that its transmission was not successful. It then enters into a backoff phase, which is some random KP time slots, and after that, it retransmits. Okay. So the total time that it takes to transmit a packet then, or the total delay, is you'll have a number of these unsuccessful transmission cycles, followed by finally, at some point, a successful transmission cycle. Okay. So we've chosen quite a simple back-off algorithm. We have a fixed slot and we choose a fixed set, and we choose our backoff just somewhere within the set. Okay, so k can be any number from 0 to k, large k minus 1. Okay. So the time for a transmission cycle or a retransmission cycle, again, we transmit the packet, we discover, which is time p, we discover that it's an error, which is time rp, and then we back off for k time slots. Okay. And we can it's easy to calculate the average back off time. Well, essentially it's just 1 over yeah, okay, that's right. It's 1 over k, summation kp. And so, again, on average, your k is going to be in the middle. So k minus 1 over 2 times p time slots. Okay, so we can just plug that in as well. And we get the time it takes, the average time of our backoff cycle. So that's the, from a packet's point of view, the average time it takes to be unsuccessful. Now it's going to be unsuccessful some variable amount of times, and then it'll be successful. Okay. So there's a number of other components to take into account when you talk about the overall delay. Well, obviously when the packet is successfully transmitted, there's a transmission time, so there's a factor of p. The packet, since we're dealing with slotted aloha, when the packet arrives, the first time round, it has to wait for the slot to even begin all these cycles. And so the slot is of length p, so the average amount of time the packet waits is p over 2. Okay. The packet takes some time to propagate to its destination, and we say that on average the packet will travel a third of the length of the bus to reach its destination. And so that gives us a delay of tau over 3, where tau is the total transit time. Okay, so then our final component is, again, the component made up of all these retransmissions. So we know that we have, each retransmission cycle, we've calculated on average how long each retransmission cycle is, but then we need to calculate how many of those there's going to be. Okay. And so we call the average number of retransmissions, or the average number of retransmission cycles, H. And the total delay then is a function of this value H. Okay. And, this is just plugging H into our, plugging all of our values into our delay equation. Now, as it turns out, it's not at all simple to calculate H analytically. Okay. So I'm going to sketch an approach, and I'm not going to provide all of the details. Naturally, I would not expect to examine you on all the details either. If you're interested, again, Hammond and O'Reilly in the appendix actually goes through and grinds out everything, all of the details. Okay. So what we need to calculate is, again, a distribution for H. In general, how many of these cycles there is. Okay. And in order to do that, we start with a couple of other factors. Qn is the probability of a successful transmission given it's not a transmission. So Qn says what's the probability I get it right first time around. Qt is the probability of a successful transmission given that it is a retransmission. Okay. So the probability that you require I transmissions is going to be the probability that you don't get it right the first time, so 1 minus Qn, plus the probability that you have I minus 1 unsuccessful times the probability you have I minus 1 unsuccessful transmissions, and then finally times the probability that your last transmission is then successful. Okay, so H is just the average number of retransmissions, and that's given by, again, just taking the average of, the expectation, I should say, of IPI. And we can calculate that out to be 1 minus Qn over Qt. So again, this is it's a fairly simple sum. You pull out all the constants, so you pull out 1 minus Qn, you pull out Qt, and you want to get rid of the, and you pull out 1 minus Qt to the minus 1, you're left with summation I 1 minus Qt, which is of this form, and so, that would give you 1 minus Qt over Qt squared. Plug that in with all of this, and you will get your result. Now, that's good, except we still don't know what Qn and Qt are. Okay, so this is the part that's the duct proving. The proof takes a few pages. We can write Qn and Qt in terms of S and G. And you get these rather complicated looking equations. We can also derive a second relationship between Qn, Qt, and S and G. Okay. And this one involves observing that, again, G over S is the average number of times we have to transmit a packet. That's obviously 1 plus the average number of unsuccessful attempts to transmit a packet. So we can get H in terms of G and S, or G and S in terms of H, and then also observe that H is a function of Qn and Qt. So plugging in our value in terms of Qn and Qt for H, we get an equation involving S, G, and Qn and Qt. Okay. So we can now solve these to eliminate two of the variables. We could either eliminate S and G, or we could eliminate Qn and Qt. Okay. It's not an easy calculation to grind that out. Okay. But so what we do see is, again, we can solve these equations, and using our solutions, we can either calculate the delays, or we have arrived at another calculation for our S and G based on explicitly determining delays, as opposed to sort of, again, this overall offered load versus throughput type argument. Okay. Again, we're not going to look at this analytically, and we're not going to grind it out any other way. Just to note that in the limiting case, then again we arrive back at our original results. In general, the result does depend on K, so it does depend on your back-off period. Okay. And so our plot here shows this relation, and it shows that essentially the larger the back-off period is, the closer you get to your actual result. The closer you get to this sort of idealized result. Okay. So, that's essentially all we're going to say about slotted aloha. We've looked at a few analytical results. We've seen, again, that it does get complicated. We've made a fair amount of assumptions. Despite the assumptions, the general behavior tends to look similar. So again, you could argue that sort of generally you're getting some idea of how the system is going to behave. Is slotted aloha used? Do we care? And the answer is it is, in some systems, specifically it can be a component of radio access systems. And again, radio access is generally, well, in a lot of cases, it's centrally controlled for various reasons. And provisioning is usually done according to a number of different policies. And one component of that is that if you have traffic that's only transmitted sporadically, then often you might have a reservation-based system where at some point stations with traffic to send request an allocation to send it. Okay. And so we end up with contention periods or reservation periods where these requests are made. Now, since we have a number of users and we don't know which ones want to make requests at any given time, frequently those contention periods are governed by a slotted aloha protocol. So whoever wants to transmit sends their requests via a slotted aloha protocol during these contention periods. And then, based on whatever requests get through, resources are allocated. So in some small way, it is still used, although sort of usually in conjunction with other protocols and other allocation mechanisms. Okay. So just to summarize what we've looked at, we looked at two forms of aloha, pure and slotted or unslotted and slotted, and we saw that slotted gave better performance. And for slotted. We also took a look, but all of the results were derived under rather restrictive assumptions, particularly about the arrival processes of the traffic. We looked then for slotted aloha at relaxing some of those arrival, some of those assumptions, and so we derived actual results with these relaxed assumptions, or we asserted that maybe that results could be derived without doing it ourselves, and then we saw that at least in the limiting case that our derived results resembled our original case as well. Okay. So, aloha is not used all that frequently anymore. But the idea behind aloha, this idea of contention resolution, has transferred on to protocols that are still very much in use in local area networks, and variants of them have been adapted for wireless local area networks. Okay. So, in aloha, a station transmitted, you know, whatever it felt like it. The improvement made by carrier sense, multiple access, and carrier sense is the key word there, is that it suggested that you should listen to the channel and only transmit if you detect an idle, if you detect the channel is idle. Okay. If the channel is busy, then we'll go through. There's a number of strategies that you might want to use to decide when to retransmit. Okay. Now, the success or the improvement or not of carrier sense over aloha, again, to some extent hinges on the length of the propagation time relative to the transmission time. If the propagation time is the primary factor, then if you're sitting there listening, you're probably wasting your time. Okay, you're wasting your time for something short that could be anywhere in this very big region of time. Okay. On the other hand, if you think your transmission time is relatively long, and usually what you do is you listen for sort of a multiple of the propagation, if you listen for the propagation time or twice the propagation time, well, in that case, you're not losing that much time by listening, and potentially, again, you're catching a packet that's been transmitted. And if you then choose not to transmit your packet, you're not going to cause a collision. Okay. So, there's a number of strategies to decide what to do. If you listen and you hear that the medium is busy, if the channel is busy, then there's a number of strategies for what you do. In a non-persistent strategy, well, you just say, oh, well, you go to a back-off mechanism. You say, oh, well, I'll transmit sometime later. Okay. Other option is that with some probability you retransmit once you sense the medium is idle. Okay. And so the most straightforward case of that is what's called one persistent. And in one persistent, you retransmit as soon as you detect that the channel has become idle. And this is the basis of Ethernet. And you can think, well, this is going to be good as long as there's not a lot of traffic. Otherwise, the station becomes idle and everybody starts to retransmit. Okay. The other option is what's called p-persistent. And with p-persistent, you, when the channel becomes idle, you retransmit with a certain probability, or you delay for one time slot with a certain probability. And what this attempts to do is that if multiple stations have sensed that the channel is busy, it's meant to stop them all from piling in and transmitting at the same time. Okay. Now, I'm going to look at results for CSMA in the sense we're going to look at, we're going to look at trends and curves, but we're going to do this without actually deriving any of the proofs. Essentially, the approach is very much the same to what you would have seen in Slotted Aloha, but it becomes even more complicated. So we could be here a few more days, and that's probably not useful. Okay, so just to summarize the strategies, the addition from the basic Aloha protocol is, again, we wait and we listen to the channel. And again, then what decision we make is either, depends on our protocol, it's either non-persistent, in which case we just go, oh well, the channel's busy, I'm going to back off. And again, the traffic comes around later at some point. And then the other option is a p-persistent strategy. And in the p-persistent strategy, with some probability, with some probability, you transmit your packet. And with one minus that probability, you delay for a time slot. And then you continue to sense the medium. Okay, so that means if nobody's transmitted during that delay period, okay, you can think about transmitting again. If somebody has started a transmission, you wait. Okay. So, the setup in order to derive the results is similar, it's the same as we were using previously. We're assuming an infinite number of users with a Poisson arrival packet, which combines both new and previously collided packets with our rate G. We have a fixed propagation delay. We have a fixed transmission time. Again, lumping in the propagation time. Okay. And then we're still in a lightly loaded network in the sense our stations have at most one packet to transmit, and carrier sensing takes no time. Okay, so we haven't added any other delay factors. Okay, so we can derive a result for our efficiency. Now it depends on G, but it also depends on the ratio of the propagation time to the packet transmission time. Okay. And since this is a bit, it's a significant factor, so we give it a name A, and we plug that into our equation. Okay. So now, S is dependent on two factors, G and A. Okay, and we'll see how that figures in. Okay. And so, again, what we'd said intuitively is that these things work well if our transmission time is big relative to our propagation time. And so what does that mean? That means that A, if these sorts of protocols work well if A is small. Okay. And so we see that this is sort of the results that we get. As A becomes smaller, our efficiency increases. And we see that when A is 1, so when the propagation time equals the transmission time, that we're actually, at this point, worse than the original Aloha protocol. Or at least more or less as bad. Okay, so again, the thing to take away from this is the trend. This works better for smaller values of A. Okay, so this is for a quite small value of A, and we see that for quite small values, then the CSMA works a lot better than the Aloha protocols. Again, what's happening here is that if your propagation time is long relative to your transmission time, again, you waste too much time waiting. But if your propagation time is sort of short relative to your transmission time, then you avoid collisions by waiting. Okay, so that was the easiest case, at least in terms of analysis. The equations get messier from there. Again, I show you the one persistent result. And again, note that it's dependent both on G and A, so the ratio of the propagation time to the transmission time. Okay, so we can take a look at that again, and we see the same type of improvement. We see that as A gets smaller, our protocol gets more efficient. And so we can also, again, for like small A's, we can sort of look at all of the protocols together. And here we see that for small G's, so for a small offered load, then the one persistent protocol is going to work somewhat a bit better than the non-persistent protocol. Okay, and again, the reason for that is if you're lightly loaded, the chances are that there's not more than one packet to transmit. Therefore, there won't be, the likelihood of multiple packets being there to transmit is fairly low, which means that any time you spend listening then is wasted time. Okay, so it's a trade-off between the likelihood of a collision and the time spent listening to see if to see if there is something using the medium. Okay, and so the results for P-persistent sort of fall along a curve there. And so, again, we can compare a number of persistence, and we see that, again, the bigger G is, the as you would expect, the greater the likelihood of a collision, the greater the likelihood that there will be multiple packets wanting to transmit at the same time. And so the more need to somehow spread those packets out and make sure that they don't all transmit at the same time. Okay. So, again, the graphs here are based on analytical results. You can grind out closed form solutions for S in terms of G and A. And you can make comparisons on that basis. And the main thing to be aware of, again, is the factors that are going into those comparisons and sort of what factors influence those curves. And again, there are now a couple of factors influencing the curves. There's the offered load, as we saw before, and what we see in terms of offered load, again, is that they all, you know, have some, what you would see actually if you sort of extended this graph out a bit is that they all have some point of failure. If your offered load gets too high, then your throughput starts going down. But again, these curves have also frozen another factor, which is the ratio of the propagation time to the transmission time. So any, again, sweeping conclusions you make about these have to be made in the context of having frozen that. So essentially making this decision that propagation time is small relative to our transmission time. Okay. And again, the general shapes of these curves stay the same, but the values and the ordering of them will vary if you take different values of A. Okay. So, that's more or less the end of this session. The things to take away are, again, there is an approach to the analysis. What we've seen is that certain assumptions have to be made in order to do analysis. And then once those assumptions are made, there are sort of techniques that are more or less the same for all the same flavor of protocol. Okay, and they can get more and more complex. The analysis, again, allows you to at least do sort of rule of thumb comparisons of various different protocols. It at some point becomes difficult to relax the assumptions too much or to explicitly represent various points. For instance, again, exactly how backoff feeds back into the system. And so if you want to sort of explicitly represent all of that, you need to go to a simulation scenario instead. Okay. And so I'm just going to wrap up by noting that CSNA is still very much alive. The original Ethernet MAC protocol was based on CSMA/CD and used a shared wired medium. Now, a lot of times, Ethernet, you know, as an entity is switched rather than contention-based, but yeah, it's still possible. It's still in the protocol. Okay. Wireless systems such as 802.11 use a variant on CSMA as well called CSMA with collision avoidance. Okay. So, again, the two further refinements that are actually used in practice are collision detection, which is the CD. And essentially what you have with collision detection is that if you the technical issue, and you stop transmitting because that's wasting time. And that's not always possible in a wireless setup, so instead they go for collision avoidance, which is it's sort of like a P-persistent scheme. Okay. So, again, looking at our flow diagram of the protocol, we now have sort of an additional with CD collision detection, we have an additional mechanism that replaces the idea that we're just going to transmit and wait for an acknowledgement. We just observe that we don't have to wait for the entire transmission. Once the collision is detected, and usually this would be at the receiver, a jam signal can be transmitted to say stop transmitting, and the transmission can be aborted. Okay. Now, then, of course, the packet goes into this back off phase and is retransmitted. Okay. But it reduces the amount of time that a collision takes. Okay. Now, CSMA CA is a CSMA strategy, but it, again, tries to avoid collision by, after detecting the medium going idle, it waits a random and predetermined time period in order to transmit. Okay. And so what happens is that any stations that want to transmit, if they detect that the medium is busy, when the medium goes idle, they always wait a fixed amount of time, and the reason for this is a bit technical. Basically, you can have different fixed amounts of time to wait, which will prioritize various types of traffic. Then, after that period, they pick a random point in time to a random point in time to start transmitting. The random point of time is in terms of some number of time slots. Okay. And so this is like a back off. You implement your back off algorithm before you've even transmitted. And so what you hope is that if you have a number of stations that want to transmit, one gets in first, the other ones then stop and wait for that transmission, and then the process starts over again. It sort of starts over again. If a station wants to transmit and detect and doesn't get in there first, it doesn't recalculate its back off, but it just starts from where it was before. So hopefully, if a station, that introduces a bit of a fairness mechanism in that if a station's sort of been unsuccessful a number of times, it should be coming closer and closer to being the first one that gets to transmit. Okay. And so again, that leads to cycles of transmission. Okay. So, again, I'm not overly concerned with the details. You'll see those sorts of protocols in, you'll discuss them sort of in practical terms in other modules.
But I just wanted to note that, again, the basic algorithms are still alive and kicking and in use within the systems. Okay, so that is it for this topic. I guess Connor will be back next week talking about modeling traffic.